All right, so this is the ins and outs of opening a bed and breakfast, a guest house, an Airbnb, or even a VRBO. And we have talked in the past even about midterm rentals, you know, how to get a midterm rental. So for those of you that are on the call, we see we have David and Derwin and Malcolm, and I think it's, how do you say that? Medi. Melissa and Rhonda. And so we see where you're from. Malcolm says Western Maryland. And let us know, do you have any rentals? And I'm going to give you an overview of long-term, mid-term, and short-term. And so put in the chat if you have any already, or where it is that you want to start. If you're just getting started, just put in there, you know, that you're just getting started so that we can see what you've got going on. So just to give you an overview, when you purchase a property, Toronto, new, who wants to start? Nice. Okay. So when you purchase a property, you have to make sure that your numbers work. And you hear that all the time. Ah, Melissa, 13 commercial doors and one duplex. She wants to use one as a midterm, Baltimore, a realtor. Okay, yes. Malcolm, you've got a little experience under your belt. You know what you're looking at least. A lot of folks haven't even started looking. Just getting started, Derwin. Okay. So that lets us know we've got a little bit of a variety in the audience today, but you hear all the time, you know, make sure your numbers work, make sure your numbers work. Well, what in the heck does that mean? Make sure your numbers work. So what happens when Rhonda, two rentals, but selling one for another opportunity, both in Columbus. Woo, I'm from Columbus. And that's where Adam is. I'm normally in Columbus. Adam, you're in Columbus right now, right?
Yes. I am in Columbus right now.
Okay, so I'm half time in Columbus, right outside of Columbus, Canal Winchester, and then half time in Sarasota. So when I look at a property, I have to make sure that the numbers work, meaning once I do a mortgage, if I have to do a mortgage, and once I kind of empty my bank account, scraping together that down payment, getting ready to do the closing, and then I've got that mortgage, and then I have to consider what is my property taxes going to be, what are my insurance rates going to be, what's that premium going to be, and then I kind of calculate everything on a monthly basis, and then I look at what the going market is for long-term rents. So that's step one. No matter what you're going to do, you have to start with the long-term numbers. And so at that point, I decide, what are my numbers if for some reason I just have to rent this thing? Can I rent it, and can I at least cover all my cost? Or do I have to put money into the pot out of my pocket? And so the question is, no, I don't want to put any money into the pot out of my pocket, because of course it's supposed to be an investment. That's the whole point. And so I want to make sure that at least it's going to cover itself. And I say that to say this, depends on where you are in your investment journey. And I hate to say it, but age often has a lot to do with it. The younger that you are, the more time you have, see, for that property to cash flow. So when I'm still working, when I was, you know, in my 30s and 40s and 50s, and I'm still working, and so I've got income from my job to live on, when I started buying investment properties, all I cared about was that they covered themselves, that I could rent it for enough to pay the mortgage, the insurance, the taxes, the upkeep, maintenance issues, you know, to make sure everything was working. And because I had 20, 30 years for that property to finally get paid off. And then, as you know, your mortgage is going to continue to go down. Your rents are going to continue to go up. And at some point, that property is going to cash flow. And so I knew that I just needed to buy several early enough that I could get them paid off so that I had a retirement income. And if I'm a little disconnected in my conversation here, I'm constantly checking the attendees to see if we have a Jackie that jumps in there so that I can bring her up. So I'm just kind of keeping an eye for Jackie. So anyway, once I know that my numbers work long-term, and once I know, that it's going to fit, it's going to be a fit for me. Now, the older you are at this point, see, now I'm retired. I'm at retirement age. I don't have that income coming in. So now it's the cash flow on those properties is my income. That's what I pay my health insurance with. That's what I make my car payment with. That's how I buy groceries. That's actually my income now. So yeah. Things look different to me now. So now when I go to buy a property, it has to cash flow from the very beginning.
Yeah.
Because what's the point? You know, I'm in my mid to late 60s. You know, I can't wait 30 years for that property to cash flow.
Yeah.
I want it to cash flow now. And so it makes a difference on where you are in life. It makes a difference how old you are. And and the bottom line is it makes a difference on whether you can wait 20 or 30 years for that property to start paying you instead of you paying for it. And so number one number you have to make sure is, can I rent this long term to cover itself? Now, from there, everything is better.
Yeah.
Because now if you've purchased that long-term property in an area that you could possibly midterm rent it, meaning that now you're going to rent it for more than 30 days, but less than 12 months. And a perfect example would be a traveling nurse, a traveling medical professional, where they come in for 13 weeks of assignment. And sometimes they renew. Sometimes the hospital or medical facility will ask them to renew. Sometimes the medical facility doesn't ask them to renew. And their next assignment might be in another whole different city. And so if you decide to midterm rent, now you have to provide a furnished place with all the utilities paid. And oftentimes, again, we did a whole podcast on midterm rentals where, you know, they don't want to pay deposits because 13 weeks later, they might be moving somewhere else and they don't want to have to wait 30 or 60 days to get their money back so that they can start renting again. And so you have to kind of enter the conversation in their minds in your marketing. But if you decide to go midterm, see, now that's a win-win because now you can actually cash flow on maybe a property that otherwise on a long-term rent payment was just paying for itself. But on a midterm, it's not only paying for itself, but now it's putting a little bit of cash in your pocket. So that's midterm. Then if you want to go one step further, which is kind of our conversation for this evening, and you want to talk about short term. Now, short term, you're going to get about four times that long-term rent, but it's going to be a lot more work. It's going to be a lot more management on your end. So number one, you have to make sure that every time a guest comes, that they've got everything they need and that they're happy and you're somewhat at the mercy of their reviews. So you want to make sure that, you know, that you're not leaving them hang out there. You have to make sure that your communication is good with them and that they get in the property okay if you're not physically there and that they have everything they need to give them a 5-star stay because you want all 5 stars, of course. And again, you're going to make a lot more money, but it's going to be more work because you have to clean between each tenant, short-term tenant. Oftentimes they're just coming for a weekend. And so you're flipping that unit often. Now, the good news with short-term versus midterm or long-term is that they're not there long enough to mess your place up too bad. Let me just say it like it is. They're not there long enough to really mess up your place. And so oftentimes, if you just have somebody staying for the weekend or for a week or even 2 weeks, the flip is pretty easy. You know, you're going to go in and clean everything and freshen up everything and do all the linens and get it ready to go again and replace maybe a thing or two that needs fixed or replaced. But other than that, it's usually not a hard flip. But you have to touch it every time a guest comes and goes. So that makes it a little more cash flowing, but more work. So just keep in mind, the more money you make, the more work that it is. So you have to decide where you want to fit in. So then we've built your portfolio from the ground up. You know, you start, the numbers work on a long term. It's in an area close to a hospital, for example, or close to a medical center. So you think, oh, I can go ahead and midterm rent this. And that's working well. Maybe you're close to the zoo or you're close to, you know, an attraction of some sort. So you're thinking, oh, let's go another level in short term rent. So now let's say you've done all that and it's not working. Can you go backward and say, well, if short term, I'm not getting the number of people that I need for a short term, maybe I could look back again at a midterm. Let's come down a level. Maybe I could appeal to those traveling nurses that are coming into the area. If you're not getting a lot of traction there, then ask yourself, maybe I could come down and actually look at just putting a long-term renter in there. Do the numbers still work? Remember, the numbers were supposed to work on a long-term when you bought the property. Do those numbers still work? Now, maybe your situation has changed. So maybe you're saying, I've got some properties. They're okay. They're not performing the way I really want them to perform or the way I need them to perform. Maybe the market is such that I would be better off to flip this property and get into yet another property and purchase one that's closer to an attraction if I want to do short term, or purchase one that's closer to the hospital if I want to do midterm. And so that's what we're talking about today. So put your questions on where you are, because again, we've got folks all over the map. Some are just getting started. We've got Melissa who has 13 commercial doors and one duplex, and she wants to get into the midterm. So give us your questions. And in the meantime, I'm going to turn it over to Adam. Adam, are your thoughts?
Well, I have a question for you, Kathy. You're positing the difference between short-term and midterm, but mm-hmm. couldn't you market that property to both channels at the same time?
Yes, you can. Now, you can, but it is going to be a little bit of a juggling act, because you have the midterm that goes for usually a 13-week assignment. Yeah. And then, they'll move on and you might have a weekend or two in there. The problem with midterm is oftentimes they don't know if their medical facility is going to extend their assignment or not until 3 or 4 weeks or 2 weeks right before the extension. And so, yes, you can then, as soon as you know their leave date, give yourself a day to get in there and flip it, make sure that everything is up to par. Then you can go ahead and put it out for short term while you're waiting to get another midterm renter in there. But I don't know, because you're putting it on with only a 2 week lead time, I don't know how many short term renters are going to pick it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a little bit of a juggling act if you're doing both. So anyhow, let's just take a look here. Rhonda says she has two rentals. She's selling one for another opportunity, both in Columbus. Malcolm says, what cities are more popular? Well, more popular for what? Everyone needs a roof over their head. So if you're doing long-term, you can do that everywhere, because everybody needs it. It just depends on your numbers. What are you paying for the property? What can you get for rent? Is there room in that deal to pay your property taxes and insurance and cash flow the amount you have to make that deal work for you? If you're going to midterm, the cities, anytime you've got a big medical center, the bigger the medical center, the better for midterm. If you're doing short term, you do really well if you get close, or, at least in the same city where there are some attractions. Why would somebody want to stay short term? In Columbus, we've got tons of attractions. We've got Ohio State. People are coming in because their kids go to Ohio State. We've got the Columbus Zoo. We've got theater. We've got football. We have all kinds of we have big concerts. We have all kinds of attractions on why people are coming into the city. And Columbus, Ohio is the insurance capital of the world. And so with it being the insurance capital of the world, meaning we've got more insurance home offices, sometimes we get a lot of folks that are coming and going because they're doing a training. And so they have to come into the city for 2 weeks to do a training because they're training to be an agent or something. And so you get a lot of short-term rentals. So we have a lot of attractions like that. Yeah. Anita says, I have four possible rentals on my ranch outside of Colorado Springs, one long-term, one being remodeled to make it ready for short-term, and two are that are not ready yet for anything. Again, I'm not real familiar with the Colorado Springs area, but I think you should do pretty well there. I'm thinking you should do pretty well there. I don't know how far outside of Colorado Springs you are, but the long term, I don't think is going to be a problem. Again, everyone needs a place to live. And so if you market it on what the going rents are for that area, you won't have any problem renting long term. Just make sure your numbers work long term before you decide to to bite off the midterm or short term. 20 minutes away from the Air Force Academy and 4 other military bases. Yeah, I think you'll be fine there.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I think you'll be fine.
I think a big thing to ask yourself when you're thinking about anything less than long-term rental is, why would somebody want to stay in my place? And there's two reasons. Either there's a destination reason, meaning you're on the side of a ski slope, or there's, you got a waterfall outside your house, or in the mountains or something. Like, people want to go to your place because they want to be there. The other reason would be a utilitarian reason. And that is, I want to go to that place because it's close to other stuff. Mm-hmm. So I want to go to that place because it's close to a convention center. I want to go to that place because it's close to a sporting event. I want to go to that place because it's close to a music festival or any other kind of like cultural arts kind of thing. So it's like, as you're gauging, like, how you're trying to develop your property, those are the questions that you should ask. It's like, why would somebody come here? And utility, a really good demarcation is utility versus destination. And that will give you a lot of information about what your next move is with your property.
And that makes a difference on how you're going to actually fill up on your end, as far as being the host. You know, what amenities are you going to put in there? If they're traveling through and you're a great place because you're right in the middle between two great destinations and everybody wants to stop off, you know, for example, Columbus, Ohio. Not only do folks come to Columbus, Ohio, because they're coming to attend something, you know, they want to attend a football game or a music festival, or they're taking the kids to the zoo or whatever. So not only are they coming there because of something they want to do there, but we're also a great stopping off place if folks are driving from Michigan to Florida, you know, and we're kind of in the middle. So they go, well, let's stay somewhere around Columbus because they know there's going to be some great restaurants and some things that maybe if they've got kids and they want to make a break in their trip and spend a night and go do something for a day, they know that there's some things they can do. They're not just pulling off at a hotel, you know, along the freeway. And the kids are like, I'm bored.
Sure. So something that I would advise anybody that's looking to get into this to look into is what's going on in your market. Something that's going on in the Columbus, Ohio market that's pretty prevalent, and I'll get into how it affects me later. But we've had a lot of non-licensed people in this space. So in Columbus, Ohio, in order to run a short-term rental, you have to be licensed by the municipality, by the city of Columbus, in order to run that. So a lot of people don't do that. A lot of people don't go through those motions and go through the application process and pay the fees. And so what is happening for us is it's saturating the market. It's been pretty brutal. In Columbus proper, it's been extremely brutal in the short-term rental market. And you see a lot of people exiting, including myself. Like, I am exiting. I have a what I would call a utilitarian short-term rental in central Columbus that is, you know, 10 minutes from everything. It's great. But at the end of the day, you've got about 1,000 competitors, and that is the challenge. So you really want to tap into your market and see, okay, what's going on? Is there licensing? And if there is licensing, what does the local investment community say about that licensing and how it's affecting their business? Because if the licensing is such that people aren't going through the process and they're just willy-nilly like listing a room in their apartment or something on Airbnb or VRBO or whatever, it's going to definitely affect your market share and your ability to generate cash.
And also, I think you have to decide, it's like any business. Anytime you start a new business, it takes 3 to 5 years. If you wanted to start a pizza shop on the corner, it's going to take you 3 to 5 years to really move into your market share. And if you're going to start an online business, let's say you're going to start a coaching business for some reason, it's going to take you 3 to 5 years to move into your market share. Those are just the statistics. That's what it is. So don't think that you're going to open up, you know, 2 or 3 Airbnbs or short-term rentals, and all of a sudden you're able to quit your day job.
Yeah.
Like tomorrow. Totally. Because the industry breathes. you know, and a perfect example, and I'm a firm believer not to put all your eggs in the same basket. And a perfect example was when COVID came through.
Sure.
Folks come and stay at my B&B because they're attending an event. Well, guess what? All the events got canceled.
Yeah.
So guess what happened? I mean, I could just watch my front office software and every couple of minutes, it was ding, 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 these reservations canceling and disappearing because their events got canceled. And so you want to be careful not to put all of your eggs in the same basket. So just know that as well. Okay, Rhonda said, I want to do a vacation destination rental in the Mexico area. The condo prices are high, like $200,000 for a 2-bed, 2-bath. I currently live outside Memphis and retired. It seems overwhelming to think about furniture because the developer's cost for that is too high. I've researched HOA and management cost in general. Any advice? First of all, Rhonda, my first question is are you already doing short-term rentals? If you do not have some systems in place and you don't have the mindset of how all of this flows and how all of this clicks on a regular basis, I recommend maybe you start with something a little closer to home and not try to manage something that far away. Yes. I would think if you manage something a little closer to home, you get a feel for what you're doing before you try to do it that long distance. Because if you have a guest that, you know, my question is, if you have a guest that calls you at 2 a.m. and says, hey, there's water coming through the ceiling, what do you want me to do?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do about it?
What's your plan? And I have a client in Mexico City, and he is investing in the United States, and he's just like amazed by our super low interest rates. And when I say super low interest rates, I'm talking about like DSCR and hard money. And that's like 8-12%. And he's like, wow, that's like rock bottom prices. So one of the challenges, only long-term, if that makes sense. So So one of the challenges with investing abroad is oftentimes you're subject to local lenders. And frankly, no place other than the United States has like as crazy of lending terms as we have. So I'm a mortgage broker. I broker loans from 40 different lenders across all different shapes, sizes, and flavors. And we help with investors, specifically in the hard money space, in the DSCR space, short-term rental space, full commercial underwriting, like anything and everything. And I can get into the details of what all those mean in a bit. But my clients that are abroad that are investing in the United States are coming to the United States because specifically our lending is just the loosest and easiest and cheapest anywhere in the world. Like anywhere else, I mean, Mexico, his best rate right now is 20%.
Oh, ouch.
Isn't that bananas? That's bananas.
Ouch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And again, it's just not what we're used to. It's not what we're used to. Yeah. You know, and again, I remember now I'm old. I know I'm old. I remember when I finally got a loan at 19%, I was celebrating because, you know, that's what it was back in the 70s. But sure. We're not used to those kinds of rates. Rhonda says that only long term. She said, and that makes sense. Yeah, I would start a portfolio a little closer to home. I had some, you know, closer to home, and then I branched out. And it almost has to be someplace that you visit on a regular basis to keep an eye on things. Nobody manages it the way you do. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how much you spend for a management company. Nobody manages your properties the way you do. So you have to create a lifestyle where you can keep a lid on that, where you can keep your thumb on it and make sure it's all working correctly.
Yeah.
Or else you get on some of the, I don't want to scare anybody. Get on some of the Airbnb Facebook groups and see the kind of things that some of those hosts are complaining about. Those things are awfully hard to handle if you're thousands of miles away.
Yeah.
Because it's just weird stuff sometimes that pops up.
Yeah.
And when we're close, we can handle it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you have to have a solid crew. And part of assembling a solid crew is networking. This is something that I talk about all the time. And that is in your local area or in the area that you're looking to invest, go to the local REAs, the Real Estate Investment mm-hmm. Associations, because they're going to have everybody that you need. They're going to have realtors. Mm-hmm. They're going to have lenders. Really, you don't need any other than me. But like, you know, just in case.
They're going to have coaches. You don't need anybody.
Yeah, they don't have coaches. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In case we get hit by a milk truck tomorrow, then that's where you would go to find others of us. But like, you know, so, but even finding other investors, other people that you can bounce ideas off of, because real estate at the end of its game is a team sport. And unless you have a super solid team, it's going to be really challenging to execute on what your plan is.
Yep, I agree with that. And again, I'm a passive income coach. One of my main lanes, of course, is real estate. I do have a team. And what we even offer for the folks that join my mastermind group, which is a paid membership group, is that we become your advisory board. And so, you know, you can bounce ideas off of us anytime. And if you're out traveling, we actually handle helping you manage your property while you're gone, while you're on the road. So we just pitch in and help each other like that. So it's great to have a great team. So just keep that in mind. So let's talk about, let's say that you've purchased the property. And again, we've all talked about, you know, for those of you that are kind of getting into real estate for the first time, if you've not heard of the BRRRR method, it's where you can buy it. You can rehab it. You go through all of that process. You end up refinancing it, pulling the money back out, and then you repeat and you do it again. So you buy, rehab, rent, and then refinance, and then repeat. And you just continue to do that. And so that way, the properties, they're paying for themselves. They may not be cash flowing. Again, depends on where you are, you know, in your life, in your age category, whether you have to have everything cash flowing or not. And right now, even though I'm at retirement age, I have a combination. I'm still investing. If a great deal comes along and I see that it's going to be a great deal down the road, I'll still grab it, even if it's just paying for itself for the first couple of years until I get everything rehabbed and get through that refinance and get to the repeat stage. And so sometimes, you know, if I can see the light at the end of the tunnel inside of 5 years, it's still something that I'm going to do. Yeah. So anyway, there's, when it comes to real estate, all the deals, when you talk about real estate, it's good, better, and best. I don't think that there's any bad deals in real estate, because given enough time, a bad deal turns into a good deal. You might have overpaid for a property, but you keep it long enough and it's going to cash flow.
That's true.
Okay.
Time heals all deals.
Yes. So, but there's a time and a place, you know, to maybe sell something. I saw, you know, I have to go back through my chat, but I see where, Rhonda, she's got two rentals, but she's selling one for another opportunity. And so that's not a bad plan. You can certainly do that. Rhonda says, where are you finding the best real estate deals, region, state, city? You know what? That's a hard one to answer, Rhonda, because it depends on what you're looking for. You know, it depends on your personality, who you are, and what it is that you want to add to your portfolio. So if you want to add short-term rentals, I mean, if that's where you're at and you say, I've got some long-term, I've got some mid-term, because again, remember, I'm a proponent of not putting all your eggs in the same basket. And you say, now I'm ready to add some short-terms, you know, I want to give that a try, then go to an area where there are some attractions, you know, but the closer you get to the attraction, the higher price the real estate is going to be, because everyone else also knows that everybody wants to be close to those attractions. And so you just have to constantly be looking. For me, it's a hobby as well as my income. I love doing it. Mark and I travel, and a perfect day for us is looking at real estate. Anybody else do that?
Yeah.
There's Jackie. Okay. She had trouble with her Wi-Fi. Jackie, let me find you up here. There you are. And Jackie, I put to come up to for panelists. So come on over. We're just chatting. So come on over. So anyway, to answer Rhonda, You have to determine, you know, what it is you want to add to your portfolio. Do you want to add some long-term to give yourself some more stability? Do you want to add midterm to get a little bit better income? Or do you want to add some short-term and give that a try and see if you can't put some more cash in the coffers a little faster by doing a higher ticket in short-term? There's Jackie. Hi.
Hi, Jackie.
We're going to jump over to you in just a second. Yes. Okay, now I'm hearing some feedback. Do you hear the feedback on your end? Do you hear it on yours, Adam?
I don't hear anything right now. Jackie, okay, can you say a couple things? Maybe we could do a little sound test.
Hi, I'm Jackie from the UK, currently living in the Caribbean.
Okay, I think we're good. So anyway, to finish my answer to Rhonda is, depending on what it is you want to add to your portfolio is where you're going to look for the deal. And then make it fun, make it a hobby. I look every day. I spend a couple of hours every day just looking for real estate deals. And when you're looking for deals all the time, you know when one crosses your desk because you see what's out there in that area. I'm going to give you a perfect example. I decided I wanted to have a condo in Florida. And I'm from Columbus, Ohio. So I just started looking in Florida every day. I started looking for properties that were for sale. And I found this one bedroom condo that was $52,000. Everything else around it, a one bedroom, was like $150,000. And I said, okay, what's wrong with this little condo that it's $52,000? And I couldn't find anything wrong with it other than it hadn't been updated since 1974. So it was brand new 1974. I mean, it had cabinets, counters, everything from 1974. And I thought, how expensive could that be to rehab a one bedroom condo? It wasn't that big. It just didn't have that much square footage. So I decided at the end of the day, and I just kept looking at it, looking around, realizing, you know what? This is a good deal. And then it disappeared one day. And I thought, my heart sank. I thought, oh no, somebody bought my condo. You see, I was already calling it my condo. And so finally, I searched and searched and finally I saw it again. I immediately, I called the realtor that had it listed and I said, I want to make an offer. He said, what do you want to offer? I said, I'm offering asking. He said, I don't even have to take that past the seller. He said, I can go ahead and put you in contract. I was in contract and 10 days later, we were putting the deal together. So I knew that was a good deal because I had looked for several weeks and everything else was two or three times the price. So I knew that was a good deal. And I also knew if it was a condo, I only had to rehab from the wall studs in. If I gutted the whole thing and started over, it wasn't going to cost me what those newer updated condos were on the market for. So I knew it was a good deal. So hopefully that helps you when you're looking for deals. But if you're looking all the time in a particular area, you'll know when it's a good deal. You'll know. So hopefully that helps. So we are going to segue over to Jackie. Jackie, thank you so much. And I didn't know if you were having trouble getting on or not. I wasn't sure what was happening, but you know, Adam and I, you know, we can talk for 20 minutes about anything. So we were good.
Well, one of the problems of having property on a Caribbean island is you lose Wi-Fi frequently.
I understand that. So now that you mentioned that, speaking of Wi-Fi, I'm going to go in and I'm going to make Adam a co-host. And Jackie, I'm actually going to go in and make you a co-host. So now all of us can see the attendees. We can watch for questions over in the chat. And I want to ask you to tell our listeners, and we've got a lot of folks on with us tonight, and they're going to be asking questions over in the chat. Give us your backstory, Jackie. How did you end up where you are from the UK? Now you're in the Caribbean. How did that happen?
On a cruise. Just okay. Really. No, but what happened is, long story, but basically, I married the same man twice. This is all part of the story. So when we got remarried, we both had properties. So we kept one and rented one out. And then I thought, and I'm, you can hear from the accent, I'm a London girl. And I thought to myself, why have I got a rental in London where I can have a rental anywhere in the world? So I went on a cruise to 9 islands in the Caribbean looking at properties. But I already knew that I liked St. Martin. And so I changed the rental from the UK and bought one in St. Martin, which is now 15 and a half years ago.
Oh, okay.
But I have 4 rentals. I have 1 here in the Caribbean and I have 3 in London. Well, just an hour north of London. So I always have a high season. So high season here is October to April. And then my high season in England is April to October. So I've always got a high season.
That is wonderful. We've got some folks on the call that were thinking about trying to do some investing away from home. How has that worked for you? Being that far, when you're in the opposite location, when something comes up, do you have a team together that handles all that?
Nope, I do everything. Literally, I have lock boxes with codes to get in all my properties, but you have to be careful. So, looking in the Caribbean, I wouldn't be by a beach. I chose not to be by the beach because of all the problems you get weather-wise, sand, salt and everything. I chose to be up a hill, so I'm away from the beach. So that cut down my risk.
Okay.
Then I made sure I had good people around me. So I can call at a moment's notice, a plumber, a handyman. Yep. There's 10 condos here. So we have a handyman that's here 3 times a week. He and I have got on well for 15 years. And as long as I look after him when I'm here, I can call him at any time and he'll come and look after whatever's needed. So it's all about having good people around and making good decisions.
We were just having that conversation that you have to have a good team on the ground that you can work with when you're not there. So it sounds like you've got the perfect plan. Now, I did the same thing in Florida when I saw this condo. I had some criteria, and for those of you that are newbies that are, you know, over in the audience, in the chat. One of the criteria for me is I did not want to be right on one of the barrier islands out in the Gulf or out in the Atlantic. I wanted to be back on the mainland, just far enough that I had access to all that beach, but I did not want to be worried every time a hurricane came through and swept across Florida. So I'm back just far enough, and then I'm on the second floor of a condo complex. So I did some of the same thinking that you had. Yes. We have Christy. She said, when you're looking to buy a home for investment, obviously you want to get it at the lowest possible, but is there a rule of thumb for an amount or a percentage that you don't want to pay more than purchasing property that needs repairs?
It's all about doing your homework.
Yes.
Which is what you were saying before. Homework and talking to people, networking, finding what else is available, how much things have gone for. It's all about asking questions and doing your homework.
Now, to answer the question in more specific numbers, and I'm going to give you my formula, and I'm going to have a lot of investors that don't agree with me, Christy. But my formula is I never want to pay more than 50% of the actual value. Once it's totally rehabbed, I never want it. So if it's worth $100,000 on the market, I don't want to pay over 50. That gives me room in the deal to do my repairs and upgrades. See, but again, that's not every investor's formula. That's my formula, and that's worked very well for me.
Can I ask a question? How many people are you all from the US?
Yes, but we have folks that want to invest in Mexico and some other areas. I think everybody, is there anybody that's not from the US? You can put that in the chat for us. So is it a little different where you are, Jackie? What's your formula?
About asking questions. I mean, obviously I've got property in the UK as well. So it's all about my percentage that I get back yearly.
Okay.
It's all about the percentage. And if I can get between 8% and 15% year, then that's what I need. So mine's okay. All about
Jackie, real quick question about it. Property in the UK. I have a buddy that just bought a house in the UK in Essex, and
that's where I live. Where I live.
Essex?
Yeah.
His name's Pat. Do you know a Pat? Because that would be crazy. He teaches over at the university, but he's telling me he's like they have 5-year mortgages, and every 5 years they have to renegotiate their term. Is that about right?
No. Yeah, yes and no. It's not a 5-year mortgage. No, don't think okay. It is. But it will be a 25-year mortgage, and it's a fixed rate for 5 years. Okay?
Got it. Okay. And then it just adjusts at market rates after that.
You have to negotiate again. But the mortgage isn't 5 years. The mortgage will be a normal term.
Okay. So it sounds like it's a little bit like our variable rate mortgages that we have here, Adam. Is that what it sounds like to you? Yeah. Yeah. And so sometimes you can get into a property, you know, on a variable rate because it's a lower rate to get in, even though you know it's probably going to go up in 5 years, it's still not a bad deal. Again, when it comes to real estate, it's good, better, and best. I don't think there's any bad deals. I think there are good deals, there are better deals, and there are best deals. And you just have to do your homework and do your numbers. Jackie, when did you decide that you wanted to actually have short-term rentals? I mean, did you start with long-term and then go to short-term?
I learned my trade first. So this property, I've had it 15 and a half years. The first 7 years I did long-term rental. Okay. Where I learn, you know, I met people. I mean, the job I do, I'm very lucky. I meet a lot of people. But it gave me a chance to learn what I was doing and made the turn to short-term rentals much easier.
Okay, okay. Because you already understood, you know, how to fix a leaky faucet and, you know, all of those things. You kind of already had some of that under your belt.
And plus it was a new property, so you got rid of all the teething problems you knew.
Okay.
As well.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. So how did you find your perfect properties? You have several. How do you go about searching to find your perfect? We've got some newbies that are just getting started and they say, how do we find the perfect property? How did you find your perfect property?
Well, it's interesting because you work in the Caribbean, you work on a completely different system to we do in the UK. So in the UK, each agent, we call them you call them a real estate agent. Each one has a specific number of properties. But here on the island, every agent has every property, which is a completely different way of working. So that's the first thing I learned. So it didn't matter which agent I saw, because they all had all the properties. So we picked one we liked, and I need to tell you a story about him. He was in his early 20s, and he picked us up in a really old car that was just about going. After learning about him and spending some time with him, we found out he had two cars. He picks Americans up in the Porsche Cayenne, and he picks British up in the old clapped out motor, because the British say, he's not doing very well, I'll give him my business. And Americans, because he picks them up in the Porsche, say he's doing so well, that's the guy I want to use.
So buying
abroad, you've got to learn your trade.
I love it.
That's Jackie, awesome. That's a great story. And you know what? I can see that being so true. That's a great story. I love it. Malcolm says, with condos, do you have monthly maintenance fees and the HOA fees and a mortgage with that? Yes, you're going to have HOA fees. And some complexes call them the maintenance fee. Some call them the HOA fee. And if you have to borrow the funds to buy it, you're going to have a mortgage. So yes, you could have those. With condos. Yeah, you've got to include those in your numbers when you're working your numbers. So yeah, go ahead, Adam.
Just from a mortgage perspective, there's a loan that we use pretty commonly. It's called a DSCR loan. That's a debt service coverage ratio loan. And that's where we take the income and the expenses of the property to qualify the mortgage rather than your personal income. It's a great option for investors, especially when investors are, you know, if they're flipping a lot of houses, if they have weird income, if they write off a lot of stuff, that's the go-to. Mm-hmm. You can close in an LLC. Oftentimes it does not report to credit. So it's an excellent option. But part of that calculation is the income over the PITIA. PITI is principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. PITIA is principal, taxes, insurance, and association fees. And that would be those homeowners association fees that you would have with condos or with homes in a you know, kind of secured neighborhood where they have an HOA fee.
Yeah. Adam, give us the acronym for that loan again.
Yeah, that's a DSCR loan. That's debt service coverage ratio.
Yes, make a note of that.
In the UK, we call it a buy-to-let. It's called a buy-to-let mortgage.
Buy-to-let?
Okay. Yeah, okay. You're buying it to rent it out.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yep, buy-to-let. Yes, I get that. Okay.
Oh, buy-to-let. Okay, okay. Mm-hmm. I thought she was saying buy-select, and I'm like, cool, I'll go with whatever she says. But no, buy-to-let makes more sense.
Jackie, did you have to dig into zoning when you're out of the country? First of all, is there zoning issues in the UK? Are there zoning issues in the Caribbean? Is there anything that says you can't do a short-term rental or it can only be long-term?
We don't even have it. I don't even understand the word.
Adam?
Short-term rental?
No, zoning. No. Adam, we're going to the Caribbean.
Zoning.
No, in the UK either. Nothing in the UK either. I've never heard of it.
Really? You can just do whatever you want with any property that you've got?
Oh, okay. Adam, we're going.
Cool.
Right here, here, there's no rules. We're tax-free and duty-free as well. In the UK, my rentals are in a holiday park. But you don't do this in the US. So there, it's literally people are using it for holiday. Maximum stay is 30 days. We have indoor and outdoor pool. We're on the beach. We have shops, restaurants, showrooms, amusement. And so there's quite a lot of rules in the holiday park.
Okay. Okay. I love it. But hey, we're going to the Caribbean, Adam.
Yeah. Sounds like a plan.
Now, once you put together that you're going to have these short-term rentals, you've chosen the properties, you had a long-term, now you're going to go short-term. How do you advertise to get folks to pick you?
You won't like my answer. I won't use Airbnb.
Well, really? No, I get that. A lot of folks don't. I am on Airbnb, but I might get one guest every 3 months from Airbnb. That's not my big one.
People, when they're coming to the Caribbean, will book a long way ahead. I'm not giving Airbnb my money for a year.
Right.
Because I'm not going to get paid till 3 days after they've been on their trip. And they will keep the money in full until the trip. They're not having my money for a year. End of.
No, so I get that. So how did the guests find you?
Mine is all on Facebook. I don't have any fees. You have to remember my job. I'm an author. So I write crime novels. So I do radio. I've got I make documentaries on Amazon Prime. So I have people are watching out what I'm doing. So people come and stay here because they know I own it, which makes me laugh.
That's awesome. I love it.
Okay, Jackie, I am the facilitator of the Ohio Writers Guild. I'm going to have to make a note to get you over on my other podcast. It's perfect. I'm an author too.
I make sure that I join in all my properties. I make sure I join all the local pages and here in St. Martin, there's about five different Facebook pages. There's 30,000 people on one of the pages.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't get a better audience than that. And, you know, good photos. You must have professional photos done of your property. Mm-hmm. I think that is vital. Look after your guests. Mine now are all repeats. So I think it's being a good host is really important.
I agree with that. So do you have any online channels at all or just none at all?
None.
Okay. Not
even a website for the property anymore.
Wow. So it's just like people finding you on Facebook and saying, hey, I heard you have a house. Can I stay there?
Yes.
That's bananas.
Isn't it?
That's wild.
The difference in the UK, that's the Caribbean. In the UK, I use Facebook Marketplace.
Uh-huh.
I get 70% of my bookings through Facebook Marketplace. And the other 30, I've just done it today. I pay $10 and I get a week's advertising on a Facebook page that has about 40,000 people on it. And I get all day long inquiries. So if I outlay $30 a month, I'll be surprised for four properties.
Okay.
I love it. Jackie, I'm going to follow you around. So, describe to us now, what does a check-in look like at one of your properties? Let's say I booked it and I've been in communication with you. I said, here are the dates I want. You give me the price. I said, okay, how do I actually pay you? And then what does my check-in look like?
Everyone pays through PayPal.
Okay.
And because obviously that's international, so that's simple. And
right.
everybody gets an information sheet emailed, and it tells you everything, how to get in, the codes, what to do, what not to do, how to leave it when you leave, everything. Everything is in that one sheet that I email.
Okay. And so now I get there, I've got my email, I've got my one sheet, I have my code, I enter the property. What amenities do you leave for your guest? Is there anything special that you do?
It's as if it's my home. Even in my refrigerator is all the tomato ketchup, you know what I mean? All the things are in, even in my cupboard is all my spices. It's like home from home, and that's what people like.
Okay.
And so in the UK.
Okay, so I could arrive there and I wouldn't have to make going to the store my first errand. I could just stay, and the next morning I could have my coffee and there would be coffee and creamer. And then if I wanted anything special, I could go get it in my travels, but I could just wake up the next morning and it would be there.
Yes.
Wow.
And I don't do this anymore, but obviously I have a cleaner that does my turnarounds, but because my guests now are all returns, I do a handwritten card and a bottle of wine for every renter in the Caribbean.
Okay. I love that.
It's the maid's task when she comes in and does the turnaround to put another card and another bottle of wine.
All right.
Adam, when you want to go?
I love buckets of wine. That's my that's my favorite type of bucket.
And
is of wine.
Here on my balcony, I have an outside kitchen and I have a refrigerator and it's full. So it's got beers, drinks, cold drinks, and all I ask my guests to do is replace whatever they use.
Okay.
I like it. Derwin says, will it be best to purchase condos specifically for short-term rentals? Derwin, depends on the condo.
Yeah.
You have to make sure you read that HOA, because some HOAs forbid short-term rentals inside the association.
And my friend who has a condo here, there's a clause which she didn't read where she can only have six guests by the pool.
Oh.
Yeah.
And if you don't read it, you know, you need to know.
So if you're looking at a condo, get a copy of the HOA rules and regulations and just make sure that it doesn't bump you out of going to the pool or that you can't do a short-term rental. You know, I did buy a condo and I knew buying it that I could not do a short-term rental because one of their rules is you have to rent it for at least 30 days or more. And their intent was to make it for long-term. But what it actually says is 30 days or more. So I actually use that as my midterm and I get twice the rent.
Yeah.
Not, you know, you could get more if it's short-term, but I couldn't do a short-term there. So anyway, just make sure that you read that. Now, Jackie, where do you get, I know you have to update linens and other supplies on a regular basis. Do you have a go-to place? I mean, is it hard to do that in the Caribbean?
You're talking about me going shopping. What an excuse. Any excuse. No, we have everything here. It's a French, it's a Dutch island and French, half Dutch, half French. So we have everything. There's nothing we can't get here.
Okay. Okay. And so if you have to replace something when you're in the opposite location, does your cleaning crew or housekeeper do that for you? Or how do you?
I have friends.
Okay.
To be honest, it's never happened. I have spares of everything. So there's spares of bed linen, loads of towels. And so you're never going to run out. I'll just next time I come out, because I tend to do 2 months, 2 months, and I'll go and I'm in a rental and then I'll go back to another rental. So I'm in the rentals. So it's not a problem now.
Okay. Do you have any one particular one that you call home?
The Caribbean is now more home than the UK.
Okay. I wondered about that. I love it. Look at her tan. You know, she's I wondered about that. Now,
I have to tell you something funny. I don't sit out in the sun. I don't like swimming in the sea. And I live in the Caribbean half the time.
And it feels like home.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
Funny. Yes. I love that.
And Jackie, which island are you on again? What did you say?
St. Martin.
I'm sorry, what was that?
St. Martin.
St. Martin. Martin. Okay, gotcha. Okay.
Oh, yes, St. Martin.
Love it.
Okay. Christy says, do you recommend buying homes that are at foreclosure auctions where you can't see the inside before purchasing? I live in Ohio, and a lot of folks do that, but it really scares me, just the thought. Jackie, you got to have some experience under your belt to do that. And it has to be where you have a crew that no matter how bad it is and that the numbers work, that no matter what needs done to that house, that you're going to come out on top. Yeah. It can't be one of those things where your budget is this close and now you're going to buy something that you've not seen or that you don't know if the plumbing is working. And one of the big things I've discovered, a couple of properties we've purchased like that, knowing, you know, that we could do a lot. And sometimes you have to dig up and replace the sewer line between the house and the street, and that gets very expensive. Mm-hmm. And everything's been turned off. It's in foreclosure. So you don't know if the plumbing is going to work. You don't know if when you flush the toilet, it's going to go in the right direction. So you have to have enough funds in your back pocket, assuming everything needs done. If you buy one of those houses, you have to be ready to dig up the yard and put in all the new underground stuff and redo all the plumbing because maybe it's been frozen, and add a new furnace because maybe it hasn't worked and it's sitting there but you can't tell, and add a new hot water tank. You have to add all those numbers together and make sure that the numbers still work for you. If you still had to do all of that, it would still work. So that's the only time that I would recommend purchasing a house that you couldn't check out or get an inspection on. So just my thoughts. Yeah, you just have to be ready to handle everything. And a couple of houses, we wanted them. We wanted the area that they were in. We loved how the house looked from the outside. You know what they say in real estate, location, location, location. And so we were like, you know what? The numbers work. If we have to touch every single thing in this house, it's still going to work for us.
Yeah.
And so we bought it. We bought, as a matter of fact, we're closing on one as soon as I get back in Ohio. We're closing on one in a couple of days after I get back. We bought it on the Ohio River, and it's just like that. We have no idea what works and doesn't.
And anyway. That's awesome. Now,
are you guys ready for this? I'm paying $26,000 for this house, not $260,000. I'm paying $26,000 for a two-bedroom house on the Ohio River.
Do you have to put any work into it that you?
We have to put all the work into it.
All the work. Any idea what your air or what your rehab budget is?
Well, I've got Mark in my back pocket, so I don't yet. But it's whatever. whatever it is, again, I did my numbers. It's got a new roof on it. It's got new plumbing coming to the house, but all the plumbing has to be redone inside the house, and all the walls have to be redone inside the house. All the floors, and then we have to add kitchen cabinets and counters and fixtures, and we have to add all the bathroom fixtures. And so I have added that all up, and the numbers still work. This house will still cash flow even after I pay $26,000 for it, even if I have to pay a contractor or a construction company to come in and do it. And again, I say this to Mark all the time. We're at the age now where I have to be able to handle it. If for some reason he can't do it, I have to be able to hire it done. The numbers still have to work for me.
Yeah. And is it a single family home or is it a manufactured home?
Nope. It's a 19, no, 18. I've forgotten the date. 1894 historical house on the brick, two-story brick on the Ohio River that back in the day, a 21-year-old built it for his new bride when he was 21 years old and lived there all his life. And then the house turned into a rental over the years. And now it's been stripped out and sitting empty, and I'm getting it for $26,000. And oh, so once I rehab it, I'm going to turn it into a VRBO.
Yeah. Awesome.
So that's the plan. So, but anyway, the numbers have to work. So yeah. So to answer your question, Christy, I just did one where I know nothing works because there's nothing in there to work. So we have to add the ceiling, the walls, the appliances, the countertops, the bathroom fixture. We have to add everything. And so we'll make sure it works as we go. Now, the good news is the house sits close to an alley. And so if I do have to dig up to tap into the city sewer, I only have to dig a few feet. So again, cost-wise, my numbers work. No matter what we have to do to that house, my numbers still work. And that's what I've said over and over in this call. Make sure your numbers work if you're buying one that needs that much work. Yeah. So, Jackie, how did you find your perfect cleaning folks? That always seems to be an issue with everyone that's getting into the short-term business. They're like, oh, I went through so many cleaning companies before I found one that just work with me. So how did you do that?
That's always the hardest thing. And get reliable and honest is what you're looking for. They're the two most important things. And the girl I've had here for 7 years now, and I just days, and she goes in and does the changeovers. I get every renter to leave her the money so that they're paying in cash. They just pay me less and leave the cash for the maid. In the UK, I've gone through a lot of cleaners, and it's just trial and error, really, paying the right price and mm-hmm. getting them to do a good job. I think you have to be specific. So they have to know exactly what you expect of them. So I think that's really important. I do in the UK, we have inventories so that they check every time there's a changeover. They're down to a time because I've got three in the same place and they've got to get them ready within 3 hours. So mm-hmm. trial and error, really.
Yes, I get that. And again, I've mentioned to the group, those that are in the chat, I mentioned to them early on, Jackie, before you came on the call, to tap into some of those, I'll call it Airbnb Facebook groups. They're short-term rental Facebook groups. And you can see some of the struggles they're having and some of those solutions. And it's a great way to kind of get a feel for what to expect so that you're not expecting wrong when you finally hire a crew and then you go, you know, this isn't quite working for me. I need to keep searching for maybe someone that I like better. And then you feel like I'm the only one that's struggling with this, and you realize you're not the only one that struggles with that. And so tap into some of those groups and just, you know, just if you don't want to chat in there, you can hang in the sidelines and you learn a lot just listening in some of those groups. Rhonda says, remind me again, what is VRBO? It's actually VRBO. It's vacation rental by owner. And the thing that makes VRBO different from Airbnb or some of the other booking sites. And I do want to talk about this for just a minute because Jackie said she doesn't use Airbnb. First of all, you have a short-term rental if you're doing this business. It's a short-term rental. Airbnb, VRBO, Booking.com, Expedia, Travelocity, hotels, those are all just online booking sites. So when people say, I have an Airbnb, they don't have an Airbnb. They have a short-term rental and they're advertising on Airbnb. Okay, so I just want to make that clear to everybody that's listening. So you're not going to get into the Airbnb business unless that's the only site you want to advertise on. You can call it an Airbnb, but you're into the short-term rental business if you have short-term rentals. Then you get to decide what channels you do or do not want to advertise on. And Jackie chooses not to advertise on Airbnb. Now, I did put mine out on Airbnb. I might get one guest a quarter, maybe for a year off of that channel. And so then I went on booking.com and I was doing really well on booking.com. But then I realized that Expedia was buying up all of these little channels. Expedia was gobbling up the hotels.com and the Travelocities and on and on and on and on. So I said, you know what, I'm going to give Expedia a try. So to this date, I would say 98% of my guests come through Expedia. And so the first thing, now the guests, they said, no, I booked on hotels.com. Well, you did, but Expedia now owns hotels.com. So what happened is once I got on, you know, Airbnb was one channel, booking.com was another channel, Expedia was yet a third channel. And so finally I said, okay, I don't want to get double booked. And so I went out looking for what was called a channel manager. And it's just a software program, cost me about $130 a month. And I can then connect all my channels to that channel manager, and it gives me one front office. Now, my background is in hotel management, and I worked for the big Marriotts and Holiday Inns and all that. So I'm familiar with the front office when you open up the computer and you see all the rooms and all the guests and who's in what room and all that. And I can manage all my short-term rentals by one computer screen because it's called a channel manager and all my channels are tied in. And so here's what is the fun part about a channel manager. Let's say that I want to block off next Wednesday. Let's say I've got some repair going on and I want to block off that night. I don't want anybody to rent next Wednesday. I can go in on my channel manager and I can block next Wednesday and it pushes it backward out to all my channels. And it makes it look to the guest like I'm already booked. It just says there's no rooms available. But I know I blocked it on my end. And so that's the fun part. And I also can move a guest from one property to another by just clicking and dragging it on my channel manager. So if for some reason I get a pipe break or whatever, and I go, oh, I can't put them there. I want to put them over here. The guest approves it. They go, yeah, that's fine. Go ahead and do that. I can actually click and drag them over and drop them into another property right on the channel manager. So anyhow, that's what a channel manager does, just for those of you that may have not heard of it. And so to answer Rhonda's question is that a VRBO is simply vacation rental by owner. Now the difference with VRBO versus all the others, you can rent a lot of the others by the room, or you can actually live like in the back of the property, have an owner's suite, rent the rest of it out. On VRBO, they want you to rent the entire house to the guest. And you'll see the advertisements on television. They've been doing a lot of TV advertising lately on VRBO saying, you don't want the guests to be staying on site. You want the whole house for you and your family. And so that's one of the criteria with VRBO is they want the whole house, the kitchen and the yard and everything. The guest gets access to the whole thing when they're staying. And so if you're renting a property that way, you could be on more than one channel is the point. Now, Jackie chooses to do hers on Facebook and Marketplace, and those are channels as well. So it's whatever works for you. Okay. Now, Anita says, what is the right price for a VRBO rental for cleaning? Anita, depends on the size of your unit. If you could have, you know, you might have a something listed on VRBO, vacation rental by owner, that might sleep 14 people. Well, that's going to be a different price than a one bedroom condo that sleeps two and maybe a pull out on the couch to sleep four. So it's going to make a difference on the size of the property. Yes, Jackie.
It's all about time. It's all about timing. How long do you think it's going to take to turn it around? Mm-hmm. And then what you're willing to pay for an hour just times it. It's all about timing.
Yeah, because the cleaners, they know what they need to make per hour. So again, you're right. It depends on how long it takes them to change that unit. It depends on how long it takes them to do it. And then, of course, you're always going to have some guests that leave things a little messier than other guests. And it's going to take your cleaners a little longer. And so you want to make sure that you take care of your cleaners, especially if you have some folks that you really like and you work well with them. Please, please, please keep them happy, because if you've ever changed over some units on your own, it's a lot of work. And so make sure you keep your cleaners happy. Jackie, a couple of questions still before we close out for today. How do you handle those problem guests? What happens if you have a problem guest that...
Just be over the top nice. There's nothing I won't do. And then no one can come back at me. I've never had anyone publicly say anything. It's all been good. That's because if anything goes wrong, you get a free weekend. You just look after your guests.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. And I my background's in banking, and we used to call that love bombing.
Yes.
Love bomb them.
I love it. Yep. That's what I do.
I get that. And you know what? And sometimes I think some of these folks, they get into the short-term rental business thinking, oh, I'm just going to get in here and make a lot of money. And they put a lot of money into rehabbing these properties and making them top notch. And then the first time one gets messed up, they're like, oh, I'm going to sue them. Look what they did. They messed up my property. And so, you know, after a while, you know, you have to understand that we're in the hospitality business. Short-term rental is the hospitality business. And you never want to forget that you are there to serve the client. Yes, Jackie.
You know what I think I do, which is a little trick, is I make it personal. So in my information sheet, I always say, don't forget, this is one of my homes. This is private. This is my property. You're coming into my home. Please treat it like your own. Yeah. So I say that in all the properties, so that people, I can't tell you the gifts people leave. So I think people the right way, and hopefully they'll do it back.
No, I agree. I agree with that totally. Yes, yes. That's a great tool, is to just simply remind them, because I think travelers sometimes get immune to the fact that they're staying in these big corporate hotels and you know that, and there's not a face behind it, you know, it's just corporate money, you know, it's like, ah, they can fix it, they got the money. Well, when they know they're staying in your home, I do think they think of it differently. So that's a great tool, Jackie. And so Jackie, how can our listeners get in touch with you?
Well, it's really simple. You just go to jackierom.com.
Okay, jackierom.com. Now make sure, did I spell that correctly?
J-A-C, no. That's it. That's absolutely perfect. Jackierom.com. Okay.
All right, I put that in the chat. I'm also going to put in there where to reach me, and Adam, put in there where folks can reach you. And I'm just going to give a little overview before we sign off. I am Kathy Binner, passive income coach. You can find me at kathybinner.com. And I do have an actual mastermind for folks that want to get down in the weeds a little more and opening their short-term rental. We're just getting ready to launch that mastermind. And so go to kathybinner.com, go to my contact page, and just send me a little note that says, I want into the B&B mastermind. the short-term rental mastermind. You can just, you know, STR, short-term rental mastermind. And the first 10 get in for free. And I've had two people. So I still have 8 openings of folks that want to get into the mastermind. And Adam is my co-mod, my co-host. And Adam, tell everybody again what you do.
Yeah. So I'm a mortgage broker. I broker all the different kind of lending needs that you have for investment real estate, whether it's short-term rental, long-term rental, or commercial. I can handle anything. Hard money, DSCR, commercial, like anything that you can think of. You can reach me at adam@lfglending.com. That's adam@lfglending.com, Lawrence Financial Group, or well, LFG, you know what the acronym is. But and
it's in the chat.
614-595-3457. And I put that information in the chat as well.
Yep, that's in the chat. And we all know how to get in touch with Jackie. And so for your next vacation, we're all going to the Caribbean.
Jackie, if you've got any questions, just ask. I don't mind sharing.
I love it. Jackie, what's your biggest property? How many do you hold?
6 in the UK. Each of mine holds 6.
Okay. And in the Caribbean?
But this one is just the 1-bed condos. So okay. I don't have more than 2 people in here.
Okay.
Okay.
Very good. So you heard, next time you want to take a trip, so get in touch with Jackie. I love it. Jackie, I'm going to stay in touch with you. Thank you so much for coming on. And
thank you.
And what I'm going to do, Jackie, when we're all finished, is I will send you a link for all of this so that you have it. And we did have one last question. Oh, let's see. Oh, Malcolm said, is there a recording? Yes. Go to kathybinner.com and scroll down to the free ins and outs of opening a B&B. Mm-hmm. Click through. You'll see all of our replays there. And because we record all of them. So you can even go back and listen to some of our other interviews. So anyway, as we go on, I'm looking, we've got Jonathan Steyer with us next month on May 23rd. And Jonathan, Adam, you know who Jonathan is.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
He's great.
Yeah. And Jonathan is not only a real estate agent, but he got into the short-term business. Now he has become a broker and now he is actually getting into managing short-term rentals for other folks. So you get to hear from, you know, how that's done from the back of the house. You get to see behind the curtain a little bit with Jonathan. So tune in on May 23rd at 6:00 Eastern time. And you can hear all about Jonathan. So with that, we're going to say good night. Thank you so much, Jackie. I love that you joined us. Adam, thank you. Same as usual. We'll be in touch. And so we'll see everyone next time.
Thanks.
Bye.
See ya.